WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. My guest Brandon Tartikoff spent 12 years heading NBC's entertainment division before leaving last year to become the head of Paramount Pictures. Tartikoff was the first network programming head who actually grew up watching TV. He got the job in 1980 at the age of 31. In his years at NBC, he moved the network out of last place into first. How he did it is the subject of his new memoir, The Last Great Ride. He's perhaps proudest of his Thursday night schedule when it included Cosby, Cheers, and Hill Street Blues. For his very first primetime season, he premiered such new hit shows as Cheers, Family Ties, St. Elsewhere, and The A-Team. But the following year, all his new shows were flops, nine new flops, including Bay City Blues, Buffalo Bill, Manimal, Jennifer Slept Here, Yellow Rose, and Mr. Smith. Who can explain it?
I need a second to just get over the migraine you just gave me by repeating.
I think Manimal probably really.
Yeah, but you have to remember that the first season, the one with Cheers et al., all the way through St. Elsewhere and the A-Team and everything, all of those programs, with the exception of the A-Team, were under a 20 share of audience, back when under a 20 share of an audience was about five or six share points below what was the, you know, the acceptable range of what a show should get to be renewed.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't really know what we had in the beginning with the shows we put on in 1982, yet we were feeling kind of giddy that the shows were at least getting well-received in the papers by the television critics. And we tried to top ourselves, and we were sort of like gamblers in Las Vegas. We had gotten a hot hand, and we were getting a little reckless at the table. So we succeeded with a program like Knight Rider about a guy with a talking car. So it wasn't that big of a stretch for us to go right from that to a show like Manimal, where you had a guy who, upon command, could change himself into any number of different animal forms. I mean, one sounds just as ridiculous as the other. And so Manimal crashes and burns, and Knight Rider goes on for 5 years. It's hard to predict these things at the time you're doing them, even through the end of the run of NBC, just because you had all these experiences and all these successes, it still didn't necessarily make your batting average any higher going in when you were involved with a new program.
One of the shows that you put on the air was The A-Team, which was very successful commercially, but you said it never did well in syndication and that action shows don't do well in syndication. That surprised me.
Actually, The A-Team of its type did okay in syndication. It went for a record amount of money. Over $1 million an episode at the time. And I think one of the problems the A-Team had in syndication is that in syndication, for a show to work, there has to be sort of a favorite show syndrome. In other words, when you see Lucy in syndication, even though you've seen the episodes many, many times, you say, oh, that's where Lucy stomps around with the grapes in the vat, or, oh, this is where, you know, it's the episode with Lucy and the chocolates, or the various different favorite episodes of Lucy keep it an evergreen in television syndication. With the A-Team, after about two or three seasons, a lot of the hijinks and a lot of the plot lines began to blur. And I think in syndication, you're there on a Tuesday, you watch it. There's no compulsion on your part to watch it on the Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. That Thursday night schedule that was so successful. What was the logic behind the time spots for each of the shows there?
Well, Thursday night, like a lot of great nights of programming, is not a night that sort of just springs full born all at once. You know, they're all members of the same class, you know, the entering class of 1984 or something like that. Family Ties had been nurtured on Wednesday night for a couple of years. Cheers had been struggling for a couple of seasons on Thursday night, and Hill Street had been the lone show that had been successful as a fixture on Thursday night at 10. What happened was that with the power of the Cosby Show, we put it on Thursday night at 8 because Magnum PI, which was a top 10 show at the time we placed Cosby there, was starting to lose some steam. Its ratings were down from the previous season, and it's a dramatic show, and usually the way to bring down a program that has been a powerhouse and has been successful is to do what we would say is cross the forms. If you're against the drama, go with a comedy. If you're going up against a comedy, go with a drama. And Cosby was placed there to really try to get the full value for Family Ties and Cheers, and Night Court was also a transplant from Wednesday Night from the season before. So what Cosby was, it was sort of like the breath of fresh air that went into the balloon and blew up the whole night to maximum kind of ratings.
I like Thursday nights a lot. I'm not talking about the TV schedule, just Thursday night in general, because it's the last working night.
Right.
The next day is Friday, and you've got the weekend. Does that influence what you put on a Thursday night?
It certainly, after we had the success on Thursday night, it certainly made us think that way, and I think others have discovered the value of having premium advertising on that night. It's the last night that retailers across the country, the people who depend on store traffic Monday through Friday, would love to get their messages across. It certainly, taught me a lot about what not to put on Friday and Saturday night, which is shows that I think draw people back into the reality of their normal week, and as well as shows that require audiences to spend a lot of time thinking about whatever it is you're asking them to watch. Fridays and Saturdays tend to be escape night for the audience to get away from their reality, and consequently, the programming forms that have succeeded on Friday and Saturday night are generally more frivolous and have less substance than the kind of programs that, say, are on Thursday night or on Wednesday and Tuesday night on the other networks.
Brandon Tartikoff is my guest. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Brandon Tartikoff is my guest, the former head of NBC Entertainment, now the chair of Paramount Pictures, and author of the new book, The Last Great Ride. One of the programs that you put on the air was Highway to Heaven. Michael Landon had already been under contract to NBC. He pitched you the idea, and you decided to go for it. I found that story really amusing, because here's these kind of like two Jewish guys, you and Michael Landon,
right,
coming up with this show about angels coming down to Earth. It's just not a very Jewish concept.
Well, when Michael pitched me the show, I said to him, now let me get this straight. You're going to play an angel of God each and every week. You're going to be the instrument of God, and you're going to help people with their lives, and you're going to write this, you're going to direct it, and you're going to star in it. I said, the critics are going to crucify you. I mean, you're going to be known as Jesus of Malibu. And he said, I'm Jewish, Brandon, so make it Moses of Malibu. And it's the kind of program where, you know, like the great shows, the most successful shows are great from the start. In the case of Highway to Heaven, it was like here was this sort of very, you know, egotistical kind of idea on the part of Landon to be all these things. But he had a great belief in his talents to move an audience. He wrote the pilot script in under 2 weeks. He shot it in time for pilot season. And when we originally screened the pilot episode, there were many members in the NBC programming department that didn't even want to play it the week when we all gathered to screen the pilots to decide the schedule, because they felt that, in the words of one executive, the only thing that was wrong with it was that it wasn't in black and white. That's how old-fashioned it was. We did send it down to testing. We did send it out to be researched and played for some sample audiences in 5 different cities. And it came back with the highest scores of any dramatic pilot in NBC history. And because we owed Michael a 13-week series commitment, we just sort of slapped it on to, again, an impossible time period, Wednesday at 8, where Fall Guy was killing us in the ratings. And it from the day it landed on the schedule, it won its time period.
You know what interests me? I can't, with all due respect to the late Michael Landon, I can't imagine you really enjoying a series like Highway to Heaven. So what was it like for you to sign a series knowing that you probably wouldn't like it yourself?
Well, Terry, you know, when you're the head of programming, you're not just putting on a 22-hour primetime schedule of what you would watch, because, everybody has their own particulars in terms of education, background, interests, and everything else. And there were many programs, not just Highway to Heaven, that in a million years I wouldn't be canceling dinner appointments because I would want to be by my set when that particular show came on the air. That's not to say that you couldn't work on the shows. It's not to say that as sort of an impartial programmer, you couldn't be helpful in the show's story developments as well as its promotion and scheduling. But I don't want to give the misimpression that programmers only put on the shows that they like. First of all, I don't like a whole lot, so we probably would have been dark for about three nights out of the seven.
In your book, you write about how in 1982 you had a relapse of Hodgkin's disease, which you had first had I think it was 1975. And, you know, you talk about how when you have cancer, you really realize what matters in your life, what your priorities are. Now, 1982 was a really big year for you at the network. It was the year... It was a year when you had some important successes, and I think when the network ratings really started to turn around. And I guess I wonder what it was like to be at this kind of, you know, live or die stage of cancer, because you were pretty hard hit, and you were going through very kind of severe treatments of chemotherapy. So what it was like to be at this live or die stage with the cancer and going to work every day as you were. And part of what you had to worry about was ratings, you know, and whether shows you didn't like necessarily were going to succeed or not.
There tends to be a sort of life and death mentality that programmers or network executives approach their work with. I guess to sort of get them through the tough hours that the work demands, to sort of say, well, if this show doesn't work on Tuesday night, then the whole night is over, it's dead, and I'm going to lose my job, and after I lose my job, I'm going to be changing area codes, and I'm going to be, without work, and all of those kinds of profound thinking that they sometimes bring to the job. When you're going through, a horrific experience like having a recurrence of lymphatic cancer, which is what Hodgkin's disease is, and you're actually being treated in a life and death manner for the disease, you tend to relegate your work to maybe what its real, you know, proper perspective is, which is, it's a job. It's a better job than, you know, selling ties at the May Company. It's a job, and you're lucky to have it, and you're lucky to get to do it for as long as you get to do it, and you should be grateful for that. And I think you should be respectful of the audience, and and patient with the audience. That if you're putting something good on, that eventually they'll find it.
Who at the network in 1982 knew you had cancer?
At the network? From my lips, Grant Tinker knew, who was my boss, the chairman of NBC at the time. I think others suspected it because when you're going through chemotherapy, you lose your hair. So I had one of those 100% undetectable hair pieces that... you see on late night television with the Hair Club for Men, and,
yeah.
You know, I'm not just a member. I mean, I'm not just the owner, I'm also a member, yeah. That kind of stuff. So I had that, and my face was a little bloated from some of the cortisone-based chemicals that were coursing through my veins at the time. So I think people would recognize that I was going through something. I mean, they might not have known exactly what I had gone through, but since I had had cancer once, and because people, I think, in general, have a lot of... mysterious notions as to what cancer patients go through and how curable are you. And getting back to the book for a second, one of the reasons I chose to share all this and to write this is the fact that, you know, I'm a very strong proponent that there needs to be more education on the part of the general public as to just the capability and the viability of someone with cancer still continuing to be not only functional in their jobs, but to excel at their jobs, because I rarely missed a day of work during the entire year that I went through, the chemotherapy for the disease.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks.
Brendan Tartikoff is the chair of Paramount Pictures and the former head of NBC's entertainment division. His new memoir is called The Last Great Ride.